Welcome into Flight Plan. We are in full draft mode here. The owners' meetings are over with. It's time to get into the draft. Tim McMaster, along with Zach Rosenblatt and Paul Kilgallen. Please like the show wherever you're watching or listening. We welcome the baggage handlers here to YouTube as well. Give us that five-star review and spread the word about this podcast too. We appreciate all of that. Lots to get to here. Zach had a really cool story yesterday where he dove into basically like five rumors around the Jets. We'll discuss those rumors. We'll see how many we get through. The Beast is out. If you're a subscriber to The Athletic, you can get that for free. Also, no better time to subscribe than when The Beast comes out. That, of course, is Dane Brugler's Beast. I think it's 600 pages this year if you were to print it out. But the online version is awesome where you can search and kind of dig into it. We're going to do a mock draft based on those picks. Like who Zach went through and made picks through PFF based on Zach's rankings. And then finally, Paul is going to weigh in on the sunshine and the clouds of the draft. What would be the best case scenario and the worst case scenario, first four picks for the Jets? So lots to get through. Unfortunately for both you guys, the final four was cloudy because we were just saying, none of us realized, I don't think, how good Michigan was, but man, they crushed Arizona. UConn gave them a fight, Paul, but in the end, Michigan too much. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, I was just telling you guys, I didn't watch enough college basketball during the season to realize how good they were. I will say, like, there are people who make the bold decision to go to the Final Four. I don't know how that I could have, like, stomached, like, spending all that money to go there, go to that game. They get destroyed, and then the weekend just over. Like, so I'm happy I didn't go. Ultimately, in the moment, it was hard to appreciate it, but as time has passed, I think I'll appreciate the fact that they finally made the Final Four, like first time in 25 years, got to see them make it there with my friends in Tucson when I was there for a wedding. So I'll take that. You know, UConn has won enough titles lately that I'm sure falling short is just disappointing because you guys have, you know, you're spoiled at this point. But
yeah, so I'm like trying to toe that line of like not being that guy, but like it hurt more, I think, because it felt like they did what they needed to do to beat Michigan. Like if the game was, if Michigan scored 100 points, it was like, all right, it's whatever. Right. But they held Michigan to in the 60s. Yeah. Like they kind of did what they needed to do and they just couldn't make the shots. So it was a little hollow in the sense that like you kind of got the game you needed to get. You just couldn't finish it at the end. And, but it was a really fun season for UConn and, same with you, like a couple days has passed. I'm willing to smile about it now. So
yeah, you guys got to catch your breath before the Syracuse dynasty returns. All right, let's move into the draft. Dak, we'll start with your story, rumor mill, things that could happen, things that are stirred up. And you did a good job at the beginning of saying like, this is silly season where just this stuff goes around, like guys who were locks to be picked at a certain point or suddenly not locks because we all need something to talk about. So why don't we picture another scenario where somebody else goes? So we'll go through these at three or four of them. We'll start at the top. Number one, you talked about David Bailey at number two for the Jets instead of Arvel Reese. And this does feel like the most possible of the scenarios you laid out. And that is because David Bailey does look like a really good fit for this New York Jets team if they decided to go that way. I want your take on that decision, Zach. Then I'm going to go to Paul for how he thinks the fan base would react to Bailey over Reese.
Yeah. So I'd say that wasn't even initially on my list that I was doing. I had like something else I was going to write in there. I think maybe the idea of Kenyon Sadiq at number 16 was the one I was going to like talk about. And then like the Bailey thing just picked up so much steam the last few days because a couple national reporters did a thing right before where like, oh, the people I talked to say it's definitely going to be Bailey. And what I'd say about that is like, you know, maybe turn down the volume in your headphones to that stuff because it's what I would say. Sorry, hearing some kids in the background.
Yeah, sorry. I'll mute.
No, it's all good. I was just like, wait, where's that coming from? But what I would say is it's that time of the year. Like I think about the last 2 years where whether it was the Jets doing the smoke screens or someone else, you know, just reading the tea leaves, it was Brock Bowers and it was Tyler Warren were definitely going to be Jets. Everybody was convinced every mock draft had them taking them, including from these national reporters who are very plugged in, by the way. This is not a shot at them. But like, you know, Peter Schrager's mock last year had them taking Tyler Warren and they were always taking an offensive tackle there, I think. So what I'll say is about this regime, what we've learned is that like Darren Mooji is not going around telling people he's going to pick. Even if it wasn't Darren Mooji, like what logic would that be for all of a sudden 2 weeks before the draft, the Jets are leaking out to everybody like, yeah, we're going to take David Bailey. No, I mean, if they are doing that, it's to try and get somebody to trade up with them. And I don't believe they're doing that. So I think it's other teams reading the room, seeing the situation, seeing where the Jets are, what they need, and saying, okay, well, David Bailey's more of a sure thing. He fits that defense pretty well, 3-4. Arvel Reese, a little more of a question mark because it's more potential than like proven production, blah, 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 like all the stuff you've seen. I just don't believe that they've, number one, made a decision yet. And if they have, I think it would more likely be that they made a decision they're taking Reese, and that's something they decided a while ago. But I do think it's very possible it's one or the other. I don't think anybody actually knows what the Jets are going to do, and I don't think the Jets have made a decision yet personally. I still think, you know, if I'm putting like percentages on it, I still think it's like 60% chance it's Arvel Reese, like maybe 30% it's David Bailey, and then the rest of it is like, you know, a wild card pick there, not counting trade backs or whatever. So I wouldn't listen too much to all the noise because this, like I said, there is a vacuum right now to be filled because there's nothing going on. And we have this build up to the draft, which is just brutal for people who write stories and do podcasts, because it's, you're kind of talking about a lot of the same things, or you're just trying to, you know, you're talking yourself into things that you weren't thinking about before, because there's just like a vacuum to be filled and information to be filled. And you have these, you know, national reporters who are digging into their sources, talking around the league, like, hey, what are you hearing about, you know, number two, number three? Oh, I think the Jets are going to take Bailey. And then, okay, so everybody's saying the Jets are going to take Bailey. It doesn't mean the Jets are telling people that. Anyway, long-winded way to say, while I think Bailey's absolutely a possibility and there's a lot of logic to it, I don't think it's absolutely not like a lock. And if anything, I still think Arvel Reese would be my prediction as of today.
So now I'm rushing to get off mute here. So I think one of the first lines in your article, right, was like, welcome to silly season, or it's silly season or something like that. Right. And that made me laugh because like that's a perfect description of what's going on right now. I always call it lying season. Like, it's hard to believe anything you read at this point. I fell hook, line, and sinker for the Tyler Warren, Brock Bowers, things the last couple of years, to the point where like I had hyped myself up so much for it that by draft night, when they made two
you really were disappointed,
good
picks
of really good offensive linemen, I was like, oh, like I wanted the sexy tight end. And so, I look at this, the timing of how this all rolled out this week of like three pretty big NFL insiders pretty much at the same time, pretty much saying the exact same thing. While, by the way, at the same time, we get a bunch of rumors about Dallas wanting to come up for a pass rusher. And so like you kind of put those two things together and you're like, okay, like let's take a step back and let's be rational a little bit here. The other thing I look at is that the betting markets didn't really move very much. Arvel Reese is still the overwhelming favorite. And generally you would have expected, with that kind of information coming out, you would have expected the betting markets to shift a little bit based on that. And they really didn't. So at this point, like, and I've kind of been saying this a couple of weeks now, I think that I'm impressed with Mooji, with what he's done publicly speaking at the owners' meetings, but also with kind of the information that's dripped out of the Jets. We've kind of established that this is not a super leaky administration with the Jets right now. So if information comes out, you have to ask yourself, why is it out? It's out for a reason if it's out. And so, I've been kind of impressed with Mooji, I think, both with the leaks and with kind of what he said publicly, like kind of keeping options open and being like, yeah, no, I can kind of go in any direction with this. And they should do that because they're in control. They're in the driver's seat. They can do whatever they want. And everybody knows what the number one pick is. So it's a good position to be in. I'll be honest, Bailey is probably my least favorite of the three potential.
He just feels like another Will McDonald to me. Like, I haven't watched him like as closely as you probably have, but just like reading up on him and talking, like it feels like maybe he's a more sure thing than Will McDonald, who was like a big project when he came in. But he feels like he's not going to stop the run, and he's going to be a purely a pass rusher, which there's some value in that. But anyway.
Right. And it's if you have that already, why do you get another one? But the counterpoint is that, well, if you have two really good edge rushers who can get after the quarterback like crazy, then you figure out first and second down, because you did sign a couple power edge rushers in free agency that you can do. Or like, there's a path to it where it makes a lot of sense. And you're like, yeah, it's a big weapon to have these two animals that will just rush the passer on passing downs. But I just think that at the two pick, there's probably more meat on the bone. It's really safe. I'll put it that way. It's really, really safe. Yeah.
All right. Next up, we had to have one of these on Ty Simpson, of course. The Jets take Ty Simpson at number 16. And to the me, this one, I know these rumors will continue just because the Jets eventually need a quarterback and here's the best guy available. But the more time goes by, I just feel like it doesn't really make sense for this team right now. Go ahead, Zach.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was Tim. I think you sent us the one liner from the Beast. What did it say about?
Yeah, I have it. I have it right here. This was the log line, so to speak. Ty Simpson from Dane Brugler, a Daniel Jones with fewer physical traits, a mid level starter at best, a backup at worst. Yikes!
So as Paul said, so he's basically at best an average quarterback, but also not as good as the average quarterback could be.
And that's like I mean, we're talking about pick number 16, right? We're not talking about the third round or even the second round. Okay, maybe, but
yeah, let's remove even Dane's evaluation. Like, sure, there are people out there who think Ty Simpson is, if not the best quarterback, like a first round caliber guy. Like, I'll accept that, but you just look at the details and what we know about this Jets coaching staff and what this Jets team prefers at quarterback and where they are as an organization. Like, it just does not make any sense on any level. Like, you have the Aaron Glenn side of things. He prefers guys who are legit, like mobile dual threat type quarterbacks. And while Ty Simpson has some mobility, he's not like a dual threat guy. He's not someone that's going to be running around and all that. The flip side is you have the Frank Reich line of thinking, which I think will be more taken into account when you look at how they're going to go about adding a quarterback this offseason and the kind of guys they've been looking at. They like guys that are taller with big arms, good pocket passers, and have a little bit of arm strength. And Ty Simpson is 6'1". He does not have much arm strength. And on top of all of that, you have the inexperience factor, which, you know, as we've said over and over again, as everybody has, like, there's just not a history of guys like him succeeding in the NFL outside of Cam Newton. Mark Sanchez had similar experience, and you could argue he had obviously pretty good success in those couple of years, but he flamed out pretty quick because I think he was propped up quite a bit by the supporting cast. So I just don't see any scenario where he's the number 16 pick personally. Like, anything out there about them loving him, like, I haven't necessarily seen that, but if it, you know, starts floating out there, I just don't think that's the case. Like, maybe they like him enough to get him at 33. Maybe they like him enough to trade into the back half of the first round, which is fine. I just don't see him being the guy that they want. Like, I just don't see the traits. I don't see the tools. Like, it just would not make any sense to me. And that's not to say he won't be a good quarterback in the NFL. I think if he goes to the right situation and he sits for a year, like, if you're telling me he's going to sit behind Matthew Stafford for a year or two, like, I could see him being a good quarterback in the NFL. I just don't see it happening with the Jets. So even at 33, I still kind of am hesitant, frankly, because, you know, you can get a pretty good player at 33, or you could trade back and get some assets that they don't have. And unless you really, it's like such an interesting thing, because if you really believe Ty Simpson has the potential to be really good, then you would just pick him at 16 anyway. So if he makes it to 33, like, you already said that you don't believe in him as like a surefire guy. So I don't know that. So that's where I'm at. I don't get the vibe that he's going to be their draft pick at 16. I would not predict it at 33. If he's still there at 44, like, it'd be hard to say no, maybe, but I don't know. I'm very curious to see where he goes on draft day, because the reports on him have been like so wide ranging.
Yeah, it's all over the place. You know, there was a time when we were hearing he doesn't make it past the Rams, he doesn't make it past the Steelers. There was a time when it was like, can he go top five, which was earlier on in the college season. And so it really has been all over the place. I went back and looked at draft comps for Daniel Jones, because I was like, Daniel Jones is kind of a loaded name to throw at Jets fans.
Yeah,
It's not really fair to say, you know, it's Daniel Jones, but he's worse. Cause like, it's just like, it's a really loaded name and it's too current. So I went back and looked at draft comps for Jones, and the most common one that was floating around was Tannehill at the time. And even Tannehill is like 3 or 4 inches taller than Ty Simpson. Yeah. And like, if you ask Jets fans, like, do you sign up for Ryan Tannehill? Like, no, I don't think so. Like, I mean, he kind of floated with the Titans for a while, but no, like, I don't think anybody's really interested in that. And so, despite, you know, the big push from his agency a couple weeks, the more time that drags on, the more this starts to feel like a player who's going to slide way down further than I think people are prepared to happen. I think, like, even when, like, the Steelers get on the board at 23, they're going to look at what else is there and be like, do we really want to do this right here, right now? And so if enough teams do that where they're like, no, I think he's going to be available later, look, eventually he'll get picked. And at that point, you're way more comfortable, whether it's the Jets at 44 or somebody in the 50s, like wherever it happens at that point, you're way more comfortable being like, no, he is sitting for a year. We don't have to put this kid in right away because he was taken in the second or third round and whatever. So I think at the end of the day, it's probably the best case scenario for him, for the player, if he slides a little bit and does get to have a little bit of a more patient approach in the NFL. But if somebody panics and grabs him early, it's starting to look like it might be a mistake.
You do find when you look back through history and players that slid later than they were supposed to go, I feel like they, a lot of times that turns out to be way better than the player, the quarterback that suddenly went in the top five that you didn't see coming. You know what I mean? It's just expectations is such a big thing.
Yeah. I always think of that draft. Yeah. I always think of that draft where I forget if it was the same one or not, where Jake Locker goes like ninth and like Christian Ponder goes like 20th or whatever it is. Like, and they were purely drafted that high because they were quarterbacks and that's what you did then. And like Kenny Pickett is another one, like a guy that you're like, okay, we need a quarterback and he's the highest on the ranking, so we should draft him. Like, I wonder if teams have gotten past that now. I mean, you saw, I know Shador was a little different because there's a lot of baggage that comes with it, but I feel like there's a little bit of that too, where he wasn't actually that good, but he was just viewed as, you know, the whatever quarterback in the class. And so people thought that he would just get picked, and then he did not get picked. So I'm curious to see if the noise is changing. And as you saw with Tyler Shuck last year, I think for a long time, it was like, if you get a quarterback in the second round, it's pretty rare they work out. But Jalen Hurts and now Tyler Shuck are two really recent examples that look pretty good. So you can still get a good quarterback in the second round, but.
Well, that's part of the problem, is that you can find an example to prove whatever point you're trying to prove. True, whether it's don't take one too early or let it happen later, or he can be good late. And like, you can kind of find the archetype for whatever you want. And that's like the Tyler Shuck recency thing is like, well, like, you know, what about, you know,
what's also the worst thing that's happened is Brock Purdy being Mr. Irrelevant, because everybody's like, well, you could get Brock Purdy, so why wouldn't you try? Well, there's one Brock Purdy out of like how many last picks of the draft. So.
All right. Number three, trade Breece Hall and draft Jeremiah Love at number two. I'm going to go to you first, Paul, on this, because part of me feels like the fan base would be cool with this. I know you're talking about number two and defense and all the talent up there, but like, fans are just tired of Breece.
Yeah.
Depending on what you get, I guess, you know, for Breece. Yeah. That's what this comes down to.
I think it would be a really loud reaction. Like, there'd be a lot of like, there'd be a lot of people who are happy for sure, but I think there'd be a lot of people who are like, what are you doing? Like, don't ever, like, because there's still a lot of those like old world draft takes that still float out there. Like, don't take a running back in the top five. Yeah. And like, you can't take a guard in the top 15. Like, there's still a lot of those like old rules. Linebacker is another one where like Sonny Styles, if that were the pick, people would like it, but there would also be a lot of people who are like, you're taking a linebacker in the top five. What are you doing? Right. Because you're violating a rule. And so again, we'll take a Giant as a recent example where like Saquon was one where the Giants were kind of left empty handed after a couple of years of taking a, you know, he was hurt for 2 years out of the four, I think, that he was there, or the five that he was there. And then he goes and signs with a crosstown rival. And so that was a bad experience for them. Now, that all being said, Jeremiah Love is really, really good. Some people think he could be like a 1,000-1,000 guy, which is insane. That would be absolutely insane. That's an offensive weapon. And that's what I think people have been clamoring for Breece for years, is like to be the receiving threat and to be the rushing threat. We haven't seen it materialize. And you couple that with the Twitter stuff, that I get that this is a generational thing for me. Like, I'm on the older side. I just like don't understand why like, why? I don't get it. But like, it's, I also have come to the point of like, that's just who he is. Like, he just likes to be online. He just likes to be on Twitter. It's, maybe it's not that big of a deal. But you combine all that, like the lack of the top end production that Jets fans haven't gotten with some of the noise that he makes and all those different things. And you get to a point where I think people would talk themselves into it and just be like, you know what? Okay. Like, Jeremiah Love could be a really fun player. Like, we can get there. And I'll talk about this when we do best and worst case. The two pick to me feels like there's almost no wrong decision you can make. Like, even like, yeah. I'm trying to paint the worst case scenario. What is it? It's Caleb Downs. So you're getting like a potential Hall of Fame safety. Yeah. And that's the worst case scenario. Like, it's weird because it's a draft without these top end quarterback prospects and without these, like, really, yep. There's no huge wide receiver prospect that's a can't miss, but there is like five or six guys who you just feel good about. And so I think Jeremiah Love's in that group where if that's the pick, like, sure. Okay, let's roll.
So a big reason why I included this, by the way, is because Brian Costello reported that the Jets had breakfast with Jeremiah Love at one point. I don't know if it was with the pro day or whatever. That feels like the annual, like, you know, we're just throwing a smoke screen to make people think we might take him. So you might want to trade up if you're the Cardinals or you're the Titans or I don't think the Titans will take him. If you're the Commanders or the Giants, like, and you're like, shit, should we trade up and try and get Jeremiah Love? As you were talking, I just thought of like, the most like chaotic scenario that sounds fun to me, which probably isn't the right roster building move or decision, would just be drafting Jeremiah Love and not trading Breece Hall, rolling into the season with two, like, you know, potentially 1,000 yard receiving running backs on the same team. I just think that's like chaos scenario that I love, because I just love chaos like that, because that's like the most fun, the most content we'll get out of it. Ultimately, you're not going to do that. I don't think they're going to trade Breece Hall either. I don't think they're going to draft Jeremiah Love. But like, if there was ever a draft to just take the best guy, regardless of position, it feels like this one, like you're saying. Like, I think Arvel Reese, if you're just going on positional value and potential, like, he's the clear one to me at two, but like, there's risk attached. Like, there's a reason why people are skeptical they're going to take him. It's not like it's an ironclad lock where you've had that in other drafts where it's like the first two, three picks feel like, you know, them going in like early in the process. And so because of that, you're like, that's why you find yourself talking yourself into, like you said, a safety or the idea of drafting an off-ball linebacker at two, like Sonny Styles. I forget who the last one was. Devin White. He was the last one drafted in the top five. Didn't really work out that well for Tampa. I think he won a Super Bowl there. But so it's a weird draft. And for that reason, like, that's why you can't rule anything out. But I still ultimately don't think the Breece Jeremiah Love thing happens, even if it's kind of like a fun scenario. I think it doesn't happen largely because, while I think Jeremiah Love has significant potential, like, in year one as a rookie, is he going to be significantly better than Breece Hall ultimately? So you're just trading away Breece Hall and then replacing him. And I get, maybe you're getting a third round pick out of it or something like that. But I don't know. I don't think that's worth all the effort when you could just add maybe a potential great edge rusher at two. So.
All right, let's move on. The other two that we won't dive into, but read the story for sure, is just trading back in general was another one. And then not taking either of those guys we discussed at number two, which we just kind of got into anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Topic number two, the beast is out. The rankings are out. And Zach, you did a draft based on those rankings. So you basically went through all the Jets picks through a simulator. And every time it came up to the Jets, you took the highest rated Dane Brugler pick and you came up with, but I think it's a pretty good draft, but let's go into it. Number one was the number two pick. And I think we all know who's going to end up there because he's just about everyone's number one guy, Arvel Reese.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of discussed this on every pod lately in general, why
we can move quickly Arvel past this pick.
Yeah. So I won't go too deep on that, but I mean, if you're looking at Dean's rankings, he has him as number one overall. So that was a lock to happen.
Yeah, Mendoza number three overall for Dane because he actually has Love at number two, I believe. All right, let's go to number two, which I forgot to look up the pronunciation and I'm the worst.
Say Vega. 16, call him Vega.
You said it. Vega Lyon. Penn State guard. He is number 12 for Dane. And they get 16.
Yeah, so I think this is where the best player available thing, 16 is where that comes into play. Like, if they really believe that, like, it might not wind up being a receiver, but I think who was there on the board when I picked who would have also been options, I believe was the corner, Jermaine McCoy, Kenyon Sadiq. And I think Jordan Tyson might have been in there too. But yeah, like you said, he has Ola. He has a Vega. Sorry, not Ola. That'll get confusing with Olu and Ola if he went by Ola. but yeah, Vega. I feel like the noise has kind of gone away from him a little bit. But I don't know. I still am kind of into the idea. If like you really believe in him as like a day one, like if the goal is just to add the players who can help you right now, he might be the best option there, frankly, like if he's there at 16, because you plug him in as a starter at guard, you're able to move Tippmann to center, back to center if you want, or you can even, I think, pair him as some experience at center if you really believed in him, or if you want to make pair him a backup. The goal should always just be put the best five offensive linemen out on the field. And I don't think the offensive line has like a significant ceiling as it stands right now. But if you add Vega, then I feel like you have three, if not four, potential like quality offensive linemen. When you look at Olu, you look at Membu, Tippmann, and then you'd add him. And so I like the idea. I still ultimately think it'll probably be a pass catcher if I'm like projecting, but yeah, I'm curious what you think about the idea of picking him there, Paul.
Yeah, it is Venga Ioane.
Venga.
So,
yeah, okay.
So Lou is right. Look, I have talked myself away from this because I think there's good value later on in the draft for guards and centers. I think you can get something at that position later and be able to get something else here that's really valuable. So my problem is not with the player. I think the player is going to be really good. And hey, maybe value, you just take him and you're like, we're just going to run the ball down people's throats now. And that's who we are. And in some ways, that was supposed to be the identity last year, so it would make sense if it was a continuation of that. And now you have a quarterback who actually can run the play action and who can throw the ball deep and who can push the ball down the field. And so in some ways, I could totally understand it. The thing I didn't ask you before we started the pod was who else was on the board at these spots. And when you said Jordan Tyson, I was like, oh, like, all right. So, but I get like it's a value pick. You pick the 12th ranked player at the 16th spot. And so can't really argue with that. I just feel like there are other things that you could do here and you could still fill this.
I still had my mock here. I'll tell you, Tyson actually wasn't there, but I'll tell you some of the guys that were. The picks that came right after him were Akeem Mezidor, Kenyon Sadiq, Avian Terrell, Jermon McCoy, Dylan Thynemann, Ty Simpson, Omar Cooper.
Thynemann and Cooper would be the two that I'd be like, I'd consider, you know, getting a surefire upgrade at safety that, you know, closes the book on that position, or Cooper. But again, hard to argue with the player. Like, the player is good.
Yeah.
So.
All right, number 33, second round, but the Jets do get their receiver according to your rankings, Casey Concepcion out of Texas A&M. Not one of that like upper echelon group, but another guy.
Yeah, he's not like, when I've done these mocks, he's not one I go for just because.
Oh, and he's 21 in Dane's rankings.
21, yeah. Overall, yeah. And I think receiver, he's like fourth or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think he has him ahead of Omar Cooper, actually, which is interesting. But I've gone away from him just because he doesn't have like size, and you know, the number one thing that comes up on his scouting report is his drops issue. Like Dane said, he had 10.3% drop rate in 2025. He's like, takeaways that he must cut down on the drops and fine tune the areas of his game, but he's a versatile playmaker with an innate feel for getting open before the catch and creating after it. He can be a starting slot or Z while providing value as a returner. Like, he's a playmaker, but I still lean more towards guys who don't have drops issues, because you just went through that with Arian Smith and they clearly couldn't fix that. And I do think Frank Reich, if he has say in this, he prefers big bodied receivers. If you look at like every receiver they drafted when he was in Indy was like 6'2", 6'3", or taller. And they usually had a skill set of like, they could win 50-50 balls. They were good one-on-one getting open, and they were decent like as blockers in the running game. So I wouldn't be, he's not like my favorite option for the Jets personally, but I do see the talent.
Super talented guy. One of our guys, Dan, really loves him. Similar size profile to Garrett Wilson. I think he's a little smaller than Garrett Wilson. Yeah. He's got some, it's not a perfect mirror image, but he's got some of that same like movement profile with Garrett, where he's like just like quick and bendy, and you almost kind of don't understand how he moves his body the way he does. Definitely drop issues, definitely route technician issues. And the one that scares me the most, I think, is that there are love for the game potentially issues. of like, does he want to be an NFL player, or does he want to be, and look, I don't know this person personally. I hate like saying this shit and like being like, oh, like I'm going to question his effort but that's just some of the stuff that's floating out there. And I think if you're the Jets, that's the thing that scares you a little bit, because I don't know if the franchise, you know, ever, but really right now is in a spot where you can afford a guy who maybe like could lose focus if you're not winning and things aren't going super well. Right. And so the focus issues are what scare me the most. And, you know, we had a guy last year in Arian Smith who like drop and focus issues. Right. And so we'll get into some of your other picks that you made. You did, I don't want to spoil it, but you did do a double dip at wide receiver, which yep. I was good with. I would want to know who else was on the board for you at 33 here, if you have it in front of you.
I don't have it in front of me. I'm trying to think who was. Let me look at the rankings.
Casey Concepcion is like a first round guy. And so to get him at 33 is good value. And maybe that's the end of the conversation there. It's a risky pick for the Jets, I think.
I would say in terms of receivers, like Denzel Boston had just been picked. I know that. I believe Omar Cooper had been picked. So it was like Jeremy Bernard. If we're looking at like Dane's rankings, it would have been like Jeremy Bernard, Chris Bell. Let's see who else at receiver, Antonio Williams, Malachi Field. So it's not like it wasn't the best group of options. So I think he was just literally the best guy in terms of what the simulation drew up for me.
Gotcha.
Number 44. This would be fun. D'Angelo Pons, the cornerback out of Indiana. We've talked about him a decent amount. He's 38 in Dane's picks. And obviously I think the only question on Pons is size. He's a little guy.
I mean, we've talked about, like Glenn talks about liking corners that are bigger, and you look at the guys that like Nashawn Wright is like 6'4", Brandon Stevens is 6'3". I forget what AZ Thomas is. I think he has pretty good size. Pons is not any of that, but he just sounds like Aaron Glenn. If you just read his scouting report, like some of these lines from Danes, it says, ever since Pee-wee, Pons has been the smallest player on the field, which placed a permanent chip on his shoulder and sharpened his skills in other areas. It says he plays with a confidence swagger. Pons is undersized, but he compensates with top-tier speed, instincts, and competitive toughness that is ingrained in his DNA. His play style makes it hard to bet against him becoming an inside-outside NFL starter. Like Aaron Glenn was that as a player. Like he was great athlete, undersized, really tough, had a lot of swagger and cockiness and confidence. And so like if Aaron Glenn like sees himself in D'Angelo Pons, I could absolutely see them going for him. And it seems like the only thing anybody knocks Pons for generally is his size. Like I think the scouting reports are always pretty glowing in like his skills and his competitive nature. And is corner there the top thing I'd be targeting? No, but like if we're going through this exercise, best player available, like there's a decent chance he's the best player available at one of those picks.
Yeah. I mean, as a shorter gentleman myself, first of all, I loved Aaron Glenn as a player, like partly for that reason, right? Like he was like the undersized guy, chip on his shoulder, all that. I love Pons, the player. I don't think he's as fast as Glenn. Aaron Glenn was like,
he was really a good athlete. Yeah. He was like 4.3 or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's got like the same ball hawking ability. I mean, look, he was on a national championship team. He made plays in the playoffs. Like he was visible. Like you can't knock him for anything other than size. Like he had good competition. He showed up in the big games. He was there. My only issue with this is like, okay, so you have AZ, you have Nashawn Wright, you have Brandon Stevens, you have the nickel that they traded Jarvis Brownlee for last year. You have Minkah Fitzpatrick potentially playing the nickel. Yep. So where does this fit in, right? Somebody has to go, I think, or Minkah has to slide back to safety, or like something needs to happen to that room for this pick to be worth it with a premium pick at 44. I'm for it. I love the player. I just need to know where it fits into the plans and who else is getting shuffled around. Is Brandon Stevens moving to safety for some reason now? Is Minkah going back to safety? Like what's happening? What's the plan? And so I love the player and I'm all about getting good players in the room and figuring it out later. There just needs to be a plan.
All right. Then we go into the abyss here for the Jets, cause they have to wait nearly 60 picks, of course, cause they don't have that third rounder to the fourth. We'll see if that actually plays out that way, or if they're able to move up or move back or do something to get something in the third round. But number 103, and Paul mentioned double dipping at wide receiver. Here's the spot. Dejon Stribling out of Ole Miss. 67 on Dane's rankings, and the Jets get him at 103 in this exercise.
Yeah, so I honestly hadn't really seen his name much until I was going through the beast, and I saw Dane has him higher than I think anybody does. He has him as the number 11 receiver. His physical profile kind of fits a little bit what I was talking about before. 6'2", 207, runs a 4.36 30. Let's see, I have Dane's takeaways right here. He's not the most well-rounded in terms of his route success, but he's a big-bodied athlete with strong ball skills and a pro mindset. He has the talent and competitive toughness to settle into wide receiver two or three role for an offense. He has him as a second, third-round prospect, and we got him in the fourth round here, so good value. Like I said, I haven't read that much about him, but everything in Dane's scouting report is about how he's tall, he's muscular, he's good down the field. And so I'm interested in him. He had 882 yards, 6 touchdowns last year. I think they should and probably will double dip a receiver, and I'm curious to see like how early they double dip. But yeah, I imagine you're okay with them getting another receiver, Paul, right?
I am. Yeah. It's Dazon is how you say his name. It's Dazon. Vertical straight line threat. Run down the field as fast as you can. He can get past a DB like that. He's got a little bit of like route issues and like, he struggles, I think, to create separation when a corner is playing him a little tight. But if he can get by him on the first move or make a double move, he can get down the field quickly. And he can make the deep ball catch, which is something that hopefully is going to be in our game this year with Geno Smith. So I think conceptually it's a fit for the team. I would wonder a little bit about similar to AD Mitchell, I think, in that regard, in terms of like big physical guy who can get down the field quickly. And so in some ways it's like it's a little bit of a less polished, at least coming out of the draft, as AD Mitchell was. But I think, definitely open to the possibility. He's also a willing blocker in the run game, so you would get a nice addition there in terms of helping out. So I'm definitely open to the idea. I don't think he's, I wouldn't say he's a lock to become a wide receiver too at the NFL level, but I think that there's enough talent there. Like you can think of him like a Romeo Dobbs body profile almost. Like he's similar size, similar wingspan, all that stuff. And so if he could develop into a Romeo Dobbs, I think everybody signs up for that, right? But that's probably like the top end comparison.
All right, end of the fourth round, Tyler Onyedem, Texas A&M. I'm just zipping through these names because I really should have done the due diligence before we started. Back to Texas A&M for some defensive line help.
So you have him and before him, Keyshawn Elliott from Arizona State, linebacker in the fourth round. But I'll lump those two together so we can go through it quicker anyway. But both are good values based on Dane's rankings because he has Keyshawn Elliott as a third round value, and we got him here in the fourth, and he has Tyler Onyedem as a third round value, and we got him in the fourth. He actually has Tyler as the seventh best defensive tackle, Keyshawn as the, I believe, ninth best linebacker, eighth best linebacker. They need depth really badly, and without knowing, it sounds like he's like a leadership type of guy, and is violent downhill and maybe not like amazing in pass coverage, but like that you need to fill out that linebacker room behind Sherwood and DeMario Davis with somebody young. And so I like the idea of that. And then Tyler getting it. I mean, loading up on a defensive tackle, beefing up, they're going to draft defensive linemen in this draft, I imagine multiple. So this is what it says about him. It says he might not have a true distinguishing trait, but he also doesn't have a fatal flaw that would be exposed by NFL competition. He projects best as a one gap penetrator and dependable rotational piece. They need to be getting in the habit of developing defensive tackles because they just like have not done a good job of that the last few years. So I'm into it.
So with Keyshawn Elliott, so profiles as a really fast linebacker who's a little bit undersized, who is a willing run tackler, but struggles in coverage, and it's missed up. It's showed up throughout his career. He basically can't cover. And he's got some missed tackle issues also. So I think this profiles as more of a special teamer than anything else. I think for Jets fans, when you read about those issues, you immediately get scared because you're thinking of Jamie and Sherwood at that point. And so, you know, is it cheaper than Jamie and Sherwood? Yes. And so do you potentially, if you can get Jamie and Sherwood off the roster, is this kind of a profile fit that replaces that? Yes. But you know, it's like we have Jamie and Sherwood at home. Right. So I don't know if I love the profile risk here. But again, like it's an athletic person that if you can kind of figure it out with him, I'm open to it. And then Tyler Onyedem from A&M, versatile guy. I think he can play like a few different positions on the D line. I think probably everybody will see Texas A&M interior defensive line and immediately get scared about Michael Clemens, but he's a lot bigger than Michael Clemens. He's more polished as a pass rusher than Michael Clemens really ever was. He didn't have the production that Michael Clemens had in college, but I think that was more of a function of him floating around a little bit and his technique kind of coming on later. But I think that that would be a worthy dart throw.
All right, then these last two picks are out of Dane's 100. So you went with the position and that kind of thing. Number 228, seventh round, Wesley Williams, edge rusher out of Duke. He was Dane's 21st edge. And then 242, Robert Spears Jennings, safety out of Oklahoma, Dane's 14th safety. Just grouping those together to keep us moving.
Yeah, yeah. Williams, I don't like profile wise. I don't know that he makes a lot of sense for what the Jets are, but he sounds like a run stopping edge rusher. Not particularly big, 6'3", 256, not very athletic. So I don't think he can stand up and play like outside linebacker, 4'8", 940. But if they have been prioritizing run stoppers with their edge rushers they've added this offseason. So there's something there. And then Spears Jennings, I saw Dame compared him to Nick Cross, actually, who I know is a popular like target for Jets fans this offseason. I think he has him at like a fifth round value. We got him in the seventh round. Wesley Williams, he has him at fourth, fifth, and we got him in the seventh. So those are more just taking the best player on the board in the seventh round, which is what you should be doing anyway.
Yeah. So if we're hoping that Spears Jennings is a starting safety, I don't love the pick because he's a safety who can't cover. Again, willing run tackler, super fast. He gets up in the box and he hits people, but he struggles with range. And that's been a consistent problem for him. So I think this is a great special teams addition. It's a guy who can run down the field on kickoff and make good tackles. But it would be more of the same at safety. And when you zoom out a little bit and look at this draft in totality, if that's your plan for safety is to take another like late round, let's see if we can make this into a starter guy and he ends up getting reps on defense, I think people will be disappointed with that. So I hope that there's a different plan at safety. But again, if you're taking Pons early, maybe you do have a plan at safety with somebody who's on the roster already. So, you know, as a special teams guys with these two late ones, Wesley Williams and Spears Jennings, all good. I don't think that you plan on them, you know, playing meaningful snaps, hopefully.
That's our latest and newest way of doing a mock draft. It's always a new way to do a mock draft.
The other note I had on Onyedem that I forgot to mention is he was one percentile for three cone. And I'm a big believer in three cone is like a high predictor for success at the NFL level. And so that would scare me with him. And he did that at his pro day too, by the way, which is like favorable conditions, all that. So
yikes.
Okay, Paul, your time to shine here. I don't know. You can start whichever way you want. We're going to do top four picks for the Jets. Best case scenario in your view, worst case scenario. I don't know if you want to start the light and then send us off in a dark place, or if you want to start with the worst case scenario and then lift us up at the end.
Let me start with a question. Am I allowed to trade?
Yes. Yeah. We'll allow you to trade. If this is like this is going to make you the happiest, it's more like happy, sad, happy Paul, sad Paul is how I'd maybe describe it, more than best case scenario, worst case scenario.
Okay, so that does change the scope a little bit because I'm like a pretty big Reuben Bain guy. And so, but I understand that it's a tough sell for Jets fans to take him at number two. So I do have a trade a trade that I've been working on for a while here.
Love that.
I think if you can convince Cleveland to come up from 6 to 2 under the idea that they need to grab an edge rusher because the Cowboys are trying to get up. Titans want one. Arizona could take one. Like, if you can convince them to come up because they want one because they want to replace Myles Garrett, who they do want to trade at some point down the road to get the contract off the books and start their rebuild and get a whole bunch of assets in return. You can get 6 and 24 from them, which is a pretty close valuation on the value chart. And to make it work, you would really just need to swap like a 6th and a 7th to make it whole at the end of the day. So you're basically getting a 6th round pick, number 6 overall and number 24, and you're giving up number 2 and number 7. And I think in that instance, you're probably, in my world, you're taking Bain at 6 because you're getting him before the Chiefs want to take him at 9. And then at 24, at 16, maybe you're taking Tyson if he's still there. At 24, now you have the flexibility where you can maybe grab like the safety, McNeil Warren. And then at 33, you can get Emmanuel Pregnon or Zion Young. So you can double dip at an edge. You can get a second edge now. And then at 44, maybe you're going Jeremy Bernard or AJ Halsey. And so like you kind of, and if you, you know, if you taking Halsey at 44, then you're probably not taking McNeil Warren at 21. Yeah. It gives you this extra pick to play with that you have insane flexibility now. Now you have 2 years in a row back to back with 3 first-round picks and you have crazy flexibility. You could pretty much do anything you want at that point. In the absence of that trade, I think the more straight up way to play it is you just take Reese at 2 overall. He's kind of consensus guy there at this point. You get Tyson at 16. And then again, Pregnon or Zion Young at 33 and Jeremy Bernard or AJ Halsey at 44. Worst case scenario, as I kind of alluded to earlier, like I don't think there really is one at number 2 because there's like 6 or 7 players here who you're just like, okay, like I'm pretty sure he's going to be a really good player. I agree with the comment here. I don't care that his arms are short. I just don't. I'm sorry. Like he's going to be a good NFL player. I believe it with every fiber of my being and every piece of me. And the way he talks, he is, we've heard the culture changer thing so many times at this point. I think Jets fans are tired of hearing it, but I believe that he is. Like he's a dude who just loves football. And I think he changes people around him. Getting back to the worst case scenario, I'm not sure there really is one at number 2. So I think you just like whatever pick is there. And that doesn't really contribute to this being the worst, but I think where this gets ugly is if there's a big run on wide receivers in between 2 and 16 and the Jets are left kind of like panicking at 16 and they're calling teams, they're trying to move back. Can we slide back to 19 with the Panthers? What can we do here? Can we get out? And the clock is running down and you don't know what else to do. And you panic and you take Ty Simpson. I think that's like probably the worst
feeling that was going to be the choice there. Yeah.
Now there's a couple others too that are, I think, better players, but still, it's just not your plan.
I've seen a few people project that doesn't make sense to me that I feel like everyone would be mad about is Peter Woods from Clemson. I've seen.
Yeah, so Peter, like, really good player, but again, 16, there's
though,
16's high, and he's got like there's a reason he's falling down into the 20s, right? And so, and also just like long history of Jets taking interior defensive linemen with really high picks that, you know, they're gone in like 5 years, like they all leave. So I think some other candidates here might be Kenyon Sadiq, not because he's not a good player. I think you could make the case that if there's a one on wide receivers, you just take the best pass catcher available, which is probably Kenyon Sadiq at that point. But Are you playing that, like, can we make this tight end work? Kyle Pitts game where if you can't, you look really stupid. Jermaine McCoy, probably the best cornerback in the draft, but he missed a year with an ACL. And like, is that a gamble at 16? And, you know, you just traded Sauce. Like, what are we doing? We're just spinning assets. We're doing the same thing over and over again. Cassius Howell, if they panic at edge and Cassius Howell makes his way in. Cassius Howell, I think, has shorter arms than Bain with less production and with some other issues as well. So if you're afraid of Michael Clemens, like Cassius Howell is the Texas A&M guy to be afraid of. And then I think when you get into like 33 and 44, my worst case scenario is all centered around your plan being knocked off its axis and you panicking and not having a good backup plan, which I think has happened to the Jets a few times in the last couple of years. And I won't put this all on Muji, but like last year, I think they panicked when they took Arian Smith. I think they panicked when they traded up for Tyler Barron. You took two players who were consensus at the bottom of the draft and you way overvalued them. And I think there was a couple of years ago, the Patriots jumped in front of them and took somebody.
Yeah.
There was the year that the Steelers jumped in front of them to take the offensive lineman, which ended up being a blessing in disguise. But that's what I'm afraid of happening, is the board not breaking the way that the Jets are projecting the board to break and then making panic moves. And I think some other moves that might fall into this, like Chris Bell, intriguing player, really intriguing player. There's a lot of hair on that. I'm not sure the Jets are...
Yeah.
The team that handles that well. Jadarian Price, really good running back. But if you don't have a plan to get Breece Hall off the roster and you take Jadarian Price and we're like, all right, we'll figure out the Breece Hall stuff. And then you can't get him off the roster. Now you just kind of torched another pick on a high running back who's probably going to be really good. But so that's what kind of my whole worst case centers around, is like just the plan getting really knocked off its axis here. And the other thing that I forgot to mention in best case at the front is, with that flexibility, if you go from 2 to 6, if it's not Reuben Bain, maybe you take Carnell Tate at 6 and you take Zion Young with, you know, you have a bevy of picks now between 16, 24, 33, 44. You can address edge later. So I just threw a lot of thoughts at you guys. Let me pause.
that was good. Ty Simpson at 16 feels like the one that would really set the fan base on fire more than anything else they could possibly do, honestly. Like, I know there's like a split in the fans between David Bailey and Reese at 2. And I know there's people like you who are very big on Reuben Bain. But I would say if they pick Ty Simpson at 16 and or they get through those like first three picks and they haven't picked a wide receiver, I would say that would leave the fans with the angriest out of the group.
All right. Only a couple more weeks and all these mock drafts
become
a reality. And we can all move on and look forward to the season. This has been fun. This has been a fun episode, doing all these different things. We will have a guest for draft coverage next week. And then the following week is the week of the draft, where I think we'll probably do a final preview early in the week. And then we'll have, obviously, we'll react to the picks as they come night by night through the draft. All right, guys, good stuff. Any final thoughts from either of you?
No, I'm ready. I'm ready to get to the draft. These next 2 weeks feel like the slowest of the calendar. I will say, if you're going to be at the Badlands live show on Saturday, I'll be there.
Yes. Yeah. I meant to plug it. Once again, I am out of town. Someday.
It always
someday
works out that way.
To one of these things, man. It's it never falls.
Sounds like sounds like there's some fun stuff on the agenda. I'm excited to see. It seems like it might be the craziest crowd that we've had at those things yet. So I'm excited to see everybody.
Yeah, definitely. Stout, Midtown, 7 p.m. Saturday. It's going to be packed. I think they had to remove all the furniture from the room because we sold too many tickets. So should be a real gas.
All right. See, hopefully these guys see everybody out there. We'll talk to you soon on Flight Plan.